moving from fear to faith. Next on The Balanced Word.
We live our lives out of fear. We live our lives saying, I'm going to make the decision that is the least risky. Now, for people who follow God, for people who believe in Jesus Christ, that's a huge hazard because he wants to do incredibly amazing things in our lives. That's what faith is.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Hey, do you enjoy a good upset where the heavy underdog wins? Whether it's in politics or sports, it can be entertaining to say the least. Well, in Judges chapter 6, we run across one of the greatest of all time. Gideon would lead a few hundred soldiers against the Midianites, and the odds were against him. But they had God behind them, and that made all the difference. Today on The Balanced Word, Pastor Dave Rolfe recalls this great Bible story from Judges 6 through 8 and encourages us toward faith rather than fear.
Now turn in your Bibles to Judges chapter 6, the sixth chapter of the book of Judges as we move through the Bible, looking at some of the key Bible stories. Right now on television, well, in real life too, is what's called March Madness, the basketball championships for the NCAA, for national college basketball teams. Now, I'm not a big fan of college basketball, to be honest with you. It's mostly freshmen and then a bunch of guys that can't get in the NBA. But people are really into it, and it's exciting. And the other day, Ann came in, and I was watching the end of a game between Louisville and the University of Kentucky. They're major rivals, both from Kentucky. Now, I don't care about Louisville or Kentucky. I don't like whiskey or racehorses. But this was a close game, and it was exciting because they're rivals. And so Ann said, who are you cheering for? And I said, I'm cheering for Kentucky. She said, why? I said, well, see next to Louisville, that little number 3, and then next to Kentucky, that number 8, it means that Louisville is the number 3 rated team in their conference or in their side of the bracket, and Kentucky is 8. So I cheer for the underdog. I just like to cheer for the team that's not supposed to win. I think for many of us, the way we look at life is we love it when an underdog makes an upset. We like that, not just in basketball, but in everything. It goes all the way back to when Harry Truman won his second election for president against Dewey, when all of the odds had Dewey winning by double digits. And so that classic picture of Harry Truman holding up a newspaper that had already been sold that said, Dewey beats Truman. And Truman actually won, and it's cool. A little later on, we see, you know, that was like 48. But in 1969, when the third Super Bowl happened and Joe Namath with the Jets, who nobody thought they had a chance, he was brash and bragging, and they ended up beating the Colts and Johnny Unitas. Later that year, the Miracle Mets, they had never finished higher than 9th in the National League, and they won the World Series. It's similar to, most of you aren't hockey fans, but in 1980 in the Olympics, when the U.S. hockey team, a bunch of amateurs, was playing against the evil Russian Empire, and all of a sudden we became hockey fans because we beat them and nobody expected it. They were all professionals and we were all amateurs and college players. We love it when there's an upset. Well, here in Judges chapter 6, we see one of the greatest upsets in all of history. Someone who brought about a victory against all odds. And that guy was Gideon. Now, to put the story into perspective, it's set up in Judges chapter 6 right in the beginning. The children of Israel were going through a really dark time because the Midianites, who were a pretty mighty group of warlords who bound together, were invading the land. Now, this is a couple hundred years, 200 to 300 years after Joshua had died. Now, under Joshua, it was all victories through the book of Joshua. They conquered most of the land that God had promised them, not all of them. They kind of stopped a little short. But now here, a few hundred years later, and the Midianites are completely attacking and harassing Israel. So that Israel, when they would plant their crops and they would wait all year and fertilize it and water it, and then the Midianites would come and take what they wanted and destroy the rest. It was so frustrating. So we find in the beginning of chapter 6 that the Israelis are scared to death. They're living in caves. They're frightened by the terrorism of the Midianites. They began to cry out to God. And God raised up a prophet. And what the prophet does isn't named here, but the prophet says, the reason this is happening, God says, is that I told you not to fear the Amorite gods, but you are. In other words, you have become superstitious of pretend gods, and you're depending on them to somehow protect you instead of depending on me. So in the midst of that, now God reveals himself to Gideon, starting down there in verse 11. The angel of the Lord, which as you probably know, generally is considered to be Jesus showing up in the Old Testament, comes to Gideon while Gideon is thrashing wheat in the wine press. Now, a wine press would always be put in a cave in a cool place to preserve the grapes. Now, thrashing wheat, what that is you take stalks of wheat and you beat it against the side of a bucket until the husks fall off of the stem. You'd throw the stems away, and then you'd do what's called winnowing, where you take the wheat and you throw it up in the air, and the wind blows the husks away, the chaff, and the good seed, the good grain, ends up falling down. So the place to thrash and winnow wheat was always on a mountaintop where there's a lot of wind. Today they do it indoors, but they use a fan to blow the chaff away. So here he is, fruitlessly trying to deal with this wheat in a cave, like indoors. There's no way that's going to work well. But it says he was doing it because he was afraid of the Midianites. So his fear led him to try to do almost the impossible, thrashing and winnowing wheat indoors. As he's doing it, the angel of the Lord shows up and says, "Oh, Gideon, you mighty man of valor." Now, I'm sure the angel of the Lord had his tongue firmly planted in his cheek. Gideon was not a mighty man of valor by any stretch of the imagination. And Gideon's like, "Who, me?" And the angel of the Lord said to him, "You're going to go in this your might, and you're going to destroy the Midianites. You're going to deliver Israel from the hand of the Midianites." And that was just laughable to Gideon. And he thought, there's no way. But he goes, "I'm a little guy from a small family, from a small clan, from a small tribe. You got the wrong guy." And the Lord said to him, "I am with you. If I am with you, you can do this." So then Gideon is like, "Wow, what if?" And so he says, "I need you to show me a sign." But he goes, "Wait here, I'm going to go get a sacrifice really quick because I don't want you to do a miracle until I've sacrificed you." So he goes and gets an animal and prepares it, puts it on the altar, and he goes, "Okay, show me a sign." The angel of the Lord takes a stick and touches the sacrifice, and poof, it goes up in a puff of smoke. It's gone. And then the angel of the Lord is gone too, and Gideon's left there. And now he's afraid because he goes, "I've seen the angel of the Lord. I'm dead." And then he hears God's voice going, "You're not dead. Don't worry. It's okay. I want you to deliver my people. You're going to be the leader to have a great victory over the Midianites." So Gideon starts gathering some troops together, but at this point, then God tells him, "For starters, I want to attack Baal, this fake god, in your own dad's yard," because Gideon's father had an altar to Baal. They were so superstitious that they believed any kind of attempt at, you know, bringing the favor of any god would be a plus. So Gideon, because he was afraid to do what God told him to do, God said, "Knock that altar over, build a real altar, and sacrifice to me." So he was scared, so he did it at night took some guys with him, but he was afraid that even the people that worked for his dad would be mad at him, not to mention all the other neighbors. But he did it. He knocks over the Baal altar, and he builds an altar to God, and he makes a sacrifice. So when people got up in the morning, they're like, whoa, what happened to the Baal altar, and what's this other altar, and what's going on? And so they found out it was Gideon, and they were going to kill him, but his dad just kind of stuck up for him, and he goes, you worship Baal? Don't you think Baal can stick up for himself? Isn't it kind of weird that you have to protect your God? And so then they were, oh, okay, whatever. So he gets away with it. He begins to collect troops together. And, you know, at that point, God says, you know, okay, you're getting ready. And Gideon goes, I could use another sign. I'm getting scared here. And so God said, okay, what do you want me to do? You need another magic trick? I'll do it. And he goes, Gideon says, okay, I'm going to put out a fleece, a little rug in the morning, at night. And in the morning, make the fleece just soaked with dew and make the ground completely dry. So God's like, okay, no problem. So he does that trick, and then Gideon's like, oh, that was cool. How about making the ground wet and the fleece dry? God's going, okay, fine. But I'm sure at this point God's like, wow, this is the best I can do. But he does it. And so Gideon goes, okay, we'll do it. Now God says in chapter 7, he goes, I have a bigger problem. You have 32,000 troops. They have 135,000 troops. I don't like the odds. And Gideon goes, you're telling me, but where are we going to get more people? And God goes, no, I don't like the odds because 32,000 is too many. If you win 32,000 against 135,000, you'll just think you're great fighters. Those kind of odds have happened before. So God said, get the people together and say, whoever's afraid can go home. So he does it. 22,000 guys go home. The other 10,000, my theory is the other 10,000 were way in the back and they didn't hear that you can go home. So now there's 10,000 people left. And now God says, still too many. You'd still take credit for this. So he said, take them down to the brook and have them get a drink. And if somebody just lays down and drinks with their face in the water, send them home. If someone bends down like a soldier and scoops water up in their hand and laps it while they're watching the horizon, those are the guys I want to use. So out of those 10,000 people that were left, there were only 300 people that did it right. Now, again, my theory is very quickly they realized, hey, if you just stick your head in the water, you get to go home. And you don't have to say you're afraid. So only 300 guys, probably the first 300, ended up staying. And now God says, these are the guys I'm going to use to defeat Midian. And Gideon's like, I'm scared. God goes, okay, if you're scared, tonight I want you to go down into the camp of the Midianites. So he took a bodyguard with him and he went down into the camp. And they're standing outside a tent and they hear the soldiers inside talking. And one of the soldiers says, I just had the weirdest dream. And his buddy goes, what was your dream? He said, I dreamed that this giant loaf of bread came rolling down the hill and smashed our tent. And his friend says, you know what that means? It means that the sword of Gideon is going to come and destroy the Midianites. The Midianites have been delivered into Gideon's hand. Weird, weird story, huh? But when Gideon heard that, he goes, this guy's dreaming about me? I guess I'm good to go. So he goes back and God says, okay, you got 300 guys, divide up into groups and surround the Midianite camp on three sides. Each of you carry a lantern, an oil lamp, and a trumpet. And then, of course, you have a sword on your side. And when Gideon says go, we're going to smash the lanterns, which go off like Molotov cocktails. We're going to start blowing on horns. And you can imagine the chance of any of those 300 guys being a good trumpet player. So it's just going to be like this weird noise. And then you yell, the sword and the Lord and of Gideon. And when that happens, you win. So they get up there and they do it. Boom, 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 these explosions, these trumpets. And there's the sword of the Lord of Gideon echoing in the valley. The Midianites wake up and they're like all amped and they're starting to hack each other apart because they think the army is on them. And then the Jews end up chasing them. And then other tribes of Israel jump into the mix. Everybody wants to be a part of it. They chase down the Midianites and they basically slaughter them, destroyed their rulers, and didn't completely eliminate them, but really had an incredible victory. One of the greatest victories, one of the greatest comebacks, one of the greatest underdog stories in all of history. So after that, Gideon comes back. And they, over in chapter 8, you got to see this, because after such a great victory, Gideon was pretty popular at this point. And in Judges chapter 8, beginning with verse 22, it says, "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson, also for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian.'" They said, "You are our guy. You won this victory. This was your idea. You've shown your leadership ability. We want you to be our king," which was logical, and you'd think that would be kind of exciting to him. I mean, wow, now I have a heritage. My kids are going to have a job, my grandkids. But look what he said in verse 23. "But Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.'" This was a greater victory than defeating the Midianites. When he was able to look at the ambition that no doubt he held in his heart, and yet he took a step of humility and said, "God is the ruler, I'm not. God is the one who did this." And it's here we kind of discover probably why God chose a meek, shy, insecure guy like Gideon. Is that at this moment of victory, he has this incredible gesture of humility. And this was the peak for him. Now, as you read on through the rest of the chapter, the rest of his life, which this happened in a matter of days, okay? Now, the rest of his life, he lived for another 40 years, and Israel had peace for that 40 years. But what was Gideon doing? Did he go out and begin to conquer the other tribes that were around them? No, he kind of retired at this point. He took a bunch of gold from the people and he made a golden ephod, which was like a magic fortune-telling vest that someone would wear to try to tell the future. And he made it, and it says that Israel began to worship that golden vest. Idolatry came about because of what he did in his retirement. And then he also decided he wanted to make a lot of kids. And the way you make a lot of kids, he ended up having 70 sons, 70 legitimate sons. We don't know how many illegitimate sons, because it says that he had many wives, and he also had at least one concubine that we learn about later. And then it turned out kind of sad, where one of his illegitimate kids, Abimelech, ends up killing all 70 of his legal sons through all of his legal wives. And then Abimelech ends up becoming the next leader for a while. So kind of an embarrassing and humiliating end to such a promising career. Most of his life, before this battle with the Midianites, most of his life had been lived in cowardice. After his victory, most of his life was lived in debauchery. But he had his moment. And it's incredibly inspiring, and you have to love the story. He will always be remembered for one victory that changed the course of Israel's history, so that he ends up being listed in Hebrews chapter 11 as one of the heroes. So that's the story. What do we get from this? Well, there's a few things that I want to call to your attention. One of them is the role of fear in this story was huge. If you read through chapters 6, 7, and 8, you will see fear is being mentioned all the time. You know, it starts out in chapter 6 as the people were living in caves because they were afraid of the Midianites. You have a prophet, an unnamed prophet, saying that what God is upset about is you're afraid of fake gods. And then you see Gideon and his whole calling to ministry. It's like he's scared. He keeps needing signs. He keeps needing miracles. Even after he's got the army and he's ready to go, he's like, oh, one more. And he has the whole hear the guy dreaming sequence and all of that. Then what ended up causing the Midianites to fall was their own fear. They were afraid of each other, not even knowing it. They woke up, they started killing each other just from hearing explosions and seeing flashes of light and hearing really bad trumpet playing. And boom, they're being chased. And then ultimately, why do you make a magic vest? Because somehow you want superstition to protect you. Now, probably why he wanted 70 sons is he wanted to make sure that he would leave an heir. Those 70 sons would end up being killed, and one of his illegitimate kids ends up ruling for a short time. Then when Abimelech is killed, it's over. His seed is essentially cut off. It's all about fear. The story is about what happens when you're afraid, not when you feel fear. When the Bible talks about fear and don't fear, it's not saying you shouldn't feel fear. Fear, in its most basic definition, would be to anticipate negative occurrences that could happen. But when the Bible talks about not fearing, what it's saying is you don't make your decisions based on what you are afraid of. And that's the thing here. He had to work past his fear and to do something that he was afraid of. And I would submit to you that for so many of us, we make our life decisions based on what we're afraid of, and obviously we are afraid of all the wrong things. We become scared. Some people have come up with statistics, and I'm not really sure how valid they are, but they're probably close. Between 92 and 95% of the things that we fear never happen. It's probably close to that for sure. But even of that 5 to 7% of the things that actually do happen, our fear doesn't affect them in the least. It never helps. So what happens is, like these people, we live our lives out of fear. We live our lives saying, I'm going to make the decision that is the least risky. Now, for people who follow God, for people who believe in Jesus Christ, that's a huge hazard, because he wants to do incredibly amazing things in our lives. That's what faith is. Faith means I'm scared, but I'm going anyway. That's essentially what faith is.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolf is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com, or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Here's Pastor Dave with the rest of his message on Gideon.
Now, in our lives, we experience certain fears. There are natural fears that you have. When you're younger, a roller coaster looks scary. And you can envision it going off the tracks. You can envision flying out of it. But when you do it, I mean, there's nothing more tragic than the person who's with your group who says, I'll sit there on the bench and take pictures as you guys go flying around. And they come off and they're like, whoa, that was awesome. And you're like, yeah. But eventually you get to the point, like, I've ridden every roller coaster I've ever seen probably. And now I'm not so afraid of roller coasters. Now I just realize I'm going to be sore and for a long time after I do it, and I've done it before, I don't need to do it again. But how sad if you spend your life avoiding roller coasters, because faith is getting on a roller coaster and taking risks and taking chances. And God constantly warns us through scriptures, do not make choices based on fear. Fear is a liar, and fear will hold you back from your potential, from what God could do in your lives.
We'll come back to the story of Gideon next time on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. Read ahead in Judges 6 through 8 and join us then. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.